Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Do they have no other choice?
Yeah, but what
and
games,
I like it.
What games are you seeing in prime time?
The games that they want you to see in prime time.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're getting nothing against the Indians and Twins and Royals and teams like that.
But a little bit against
they're
them.
They're not big market East Coast teams. So you're always going to get the Sox and the Yankees in prime time. If it's the Dodgers, you're going to get them in prime time. They want those big market teams because they're excited. Adrian Gonzalez complained about playing Sunday Night Baseball when he played for the Red Sox because he played for the San Diego Padres.
Right.
Which was a small market team, didn't have big stars, didn't get the invites to Sunday Night Baseball. Well, Adrian Gonzalez came to Boston to a big market team with lots of star players, David Ortiz and Pedro and all these guys, and they play more Sunday night games. And he's complaining about, we got to play all these Sunday night games. Didn't really stop to think that the reason he's getting so much money to play for the Red Sox is because they were a big market team that gets these huge ratings and has a following, yeah, and fills the ballpark. That's why big market teams can get big players.
That's like when I was a kid, how many primetime Patriots games do we watch in the early 90s?
They were banned for a while because of the drunkenness down in Foxborough.
And
there was a period they did not schedule games at Foxborough on Monday nights because there was one particular game, and someone will call up and tell me, what, a Miami game or something on a Monday night where hundreds were arrested, and they were throwing beer cans. And
see, now that's just the Kenny Chesney concerts. They've moved that over to Country Fest. No, but I was a kid. I used to watch eight games a year for one. I only thought the Patriots played eight games because the home games get blacked out, and it was Sunday at one.
I don't want to beat up on the NFL, but I am in lockstep with the – I do not watch Thursday night baseball. Thursday night football.
It
is not part of my regimen. You know what I love? I love Sunday night baseball. There's something
football or baseball?
Football. I keep saying baseball.
You keep saying baseball.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm playing Secret Santa here. I'm trying to help the game of baseball. I will often, if the Patriots are not involved, I'm going to watch every Patriots game.
Yeah.
I'm at all the home games. I'm at some of the road games. I was at the Jets in New Orleans this year. So I did two road games. And so if it's a Sunday and the Patriots are not involved because they either have a Monday night game or a Thursday night game or a bye, I will watch the 1 o'clock game. I will not watch the 4 o'clock game. And then I do stuff. And then I settle in for the Sunday night game. It's so dark out. I get the dogs. I'm relaxed. I like Sunday night football.
The cap of your weekend.
Yeah, I like Monday night football. Thursday night football, I just don't watch. I don't even care what the matchup is. I will not watch Thursday night football because it's not like a protest. It's just like Thursday night, I almost always go out on Thursday if I'm not working, if I'm not at a Bruins game or something.
Yeah, same.
I like going out on Thursday. Let's go to Frank's Steakhouse. Let's go to Island Kitchen. Let's go to, you know, whatever. I like going out on Thursday night. I don't want to sit at home and watch football on Thursday night.
I didn't even watch the first Thursday night game when they get beat by the Chiefs. I didn't even see that one.
Oh,
that Patriots game.
That was a historic game not to watch.
I was on a flight to Amsterdam. And I landed, of course, next morning when I'm landing, it's a red eye, and I turn my phone on as, you know, we land in the raindrops.
Did
in
you
the
buy
morning,
cheese?
And I look at, no, I bought a brownie that made the rest of the day interesting. But I,
Amsterdam and didn't buy cheese?
I didn't, no, I was only there for a few hours. I was there for a day.
But that's like the biggest airport in Europe.
I was in the, I left the airport quickly. I went to the city. I went into
Did you go
Amsterdam.
To the
coffee shop.
Coffee houses, they
I went
call
to the
them?
Yeah, like an idiot, I sat there and ordered coffee at first. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then she brought me a brownie, and she told me, don't eat. She said, just have a little bit, because I think she could tell I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't listen to her, I ate half of it. And like I said, the rest of the day was interesting. I had to get back through airport security and get on a plane that afternoon, but I made it. But yeah, I landed to all the notifications that the Patriots lost. Actually, it turns out it wasn't a bad game to miss. All right, we got one more hour to go. Lines are loaded. We get right back to your call. 617-779-7937. Buck and Volani, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Kirk and Callahan.
Trent, you ready?
Aye.
Drellick, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You know the song?
Yes.
They've had karaoke history. We'll do it one more time. I want to witness it, don't you?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to this.
Up Where We Belong, Trenty Kuzin-Eric and Evan Drellick.
Yeah, yeah, that's up.
Harry Callahan. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com. Boston. Back to Volani and Buck on Sports Radio WEEI.
Final hour, Steve Buckley, Chris Volani with you, 617-779-7937. We'll get right back to your phone calls. I know a lot of you have been waiting patiently to talk some baseball. That's what we've been doing for the really lion's share of the last 2 hours and 10 minutes. Now, you mentioned the Sean Miller situation right before trending now at Arizona. He's not going to coach tonight. He expects to be vindicated, although, according to the reports, the FBI has got him on a wiretap, so we'll see how vindicated he'll be. For those who haven't followed the story, big FBI investigation into college basketball. They've apparently pinpointed about 25 to 30 programs, including all of the big ones, Michigan State, Duke, UNC, Arizona, Louisville, Kentucky, etc. And a number of players, including DeAndre Ayton, who might be the player of the year this year, tie pick, could have been a Celtic maybe if that Lakers pick turned out to work out in their favor. But supposedly got $100,000 to, as they were recruiting him and bringing him in, and they've got Sean Miller, the Arizona coach, on a wiretap talking about it. Does this bother you? You have any big reaction to it? I know it's not something that gets a ton of attention around here because BC doesn't seem to be one of the programs involved in college sports in general. Well, they're just getting started.
I don't mean that as a shot at BC at all. I'm just saying that if the FBI is looking everywhere, then everyone is going to get looked at. So I say,
like,
so just to be clear, what's that?
No, you're not throwing shade at BC, but
no, not at all. I'll throw UMass in. I went to UMass.
Anybody who's recruiting, basically,
would have to be careful.
I feel like the FBI shouldn't. I feel like this is just not an area for the FBI. For me,
they should be helping OJ look for the real killers, right?
Or on a much more serious note, how about getting any of the 55 warning signs they apparently had before that kid opened fire in the school on Valentine's Day?
I always just kind of assume, and maybe this is a cynical, horrible outlook on life, that with the money involved in college sports, obviously it's bigger around the rest of the country than it is here, that anytime lots of money is involved, it should raise eyebrows. And you've got student athletes. I love that term.
Yeah.
And who's the only persons not making money out of this? It's the quote-unquote student athletes.
Apparently not, if you believe this report.
That's my whole point. Legally.
Within the context of NCAA regulations, I mean, they could wave a wand and say, it's fine to do all this stuff and just it's open season and bring it all into the light. And I know it's the equivalent of, like the speed limit at 65, so you just make it 70, just changing the rules to make all of the things that are illegal, legal. But a lot of this stuff, I mean, the Ayton thing is getting a lot of attention because it's $100,000. It's a guy who's a impact player right now. If you follow college basketball, you've been following this particular team, even though they play out west and nobody ever watches their games, or nobody around here at least. But at the same time, a lot of these things are like a $400 dinner, for a nice dinner out or a rental car. I mean, I always think back to Blue Chips and Ricky Rowe with the tractor and the gym bag they drop off on the front porch with $30,000 in it. We're not talking about huge, huge sums of money.
I always think of Robbie Benson in that movie, the basketball movie.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what you're talking about. Didn't he get a car out of it or something? Or
well, yeah, and Shaq got the car, too, in Blue Chips. Yeah. They dropped off the Lexus for him.
Robbie Benson's coach was the same guy that played Senator Pat Geary in Godfather 2, and there was always sleazy stuff. It's like a 40-year-old movie. So why are we supposed to be shocked to find out that some stuff like this might be happening?
Well, there were rumors about Lou Alcindor back in what John Wooden was doing at UCLA to get those guys in.
I didn't know that. I didn't know. I'm not a big student of college sports. But let's talk about this. When you think of college sports, when did we first have a serious discussion about quote unquote paying athletes in college? 10 years ago, 15 years
it's
ago?
It's recent, yeah, recent.
More recent than 15, say 10 years ago?
10 to 15. Whenever it was really first, the last 10 is
whenever
when the momentum
it was first raised, I remember being outraged. How dare you, the sanctity of college sports? And right away I'm thinking it's 1940 and you're still on the other team's mascot.
The same reaction to the pitch clock.
Yeah, but I am so changed on that now that let's remove the cloak of the masquerade here and pay the athletes. Turn it into what it is, which is a feeder system for the NBA. It will not lower my viewpoint on UMass and Boston College and Harvard and anywhere else if those collegiate athletes are being paid. I won't. If I know, if I turn on right now, who's playing? Duke and Syracuse.
Yes.
Okay.
Go Orange.
So if I'm watching Duke and Syracuse right now, and I know for a fact because there's a new program in place where those athletes are being paid, I'm not going to think any less of Duke or Syracuse. I would think more of Duke and Syracuse because now, you know, the shenanigans have been removed from it.
Yeah.
Pay them.
They're out in the light. You know, everything's kind of out in the light, and you know what's going on. And by the way, I should point out here that Syracuse, not one of the 25 or 30 schools that was mentioned in the
Where'd you go
report.
To school?
I went to Syracuse.
There you go.
Yes, everything's on the up and up.
Syracuse is big in my family, by the way.
There's absolutely
my
you know
sister, Joe. Remember I told you I had a sister that everyone...
Yeah, she was the best one.
She's a Syracuse grad.
She was the best Buckley.
Yes.
That's why she went
and
to Syracuse.
Her son is a Syracuse grad. My nephew.
He is the best nephew.
So we've got
exactly.
a lot of Syracuse in the family.
I like that.
So,
and if I were the FBI, just a word of advice, I would just, you didn't find anything on Syracuse, I would just stop looking. There's obviously sure nothing to see.
Nothing to see here, folks. Move
just
along.
Just move along.
Yes.
Appreciate the effort, guys. Thanks. You can just take your dark suits and sunglasses and go someplace else. You don't need to look at that. But... Well, we just saw Louisville this week, too. They vacated a national championship. To me, so much of the... It almost reminds me of Prohibition, looking at the the 20s and the 18th Amendment. It just created, it birthed a new criminal enterprise because it wasn't like people were going to stop drinking. In this case, all you've done is birth a quote-unquote criminal enterprise because these coaches who are making... I don't know what Sean Miller makes off the top of my head, but I know it's a seven-figure number... over a number of years, there's too much money involved for him to not pay $100,000 because DeAndre Ayton holds that next year or that next 10 years of employment in his hands for the 1 year that he'll come to Arizona and maybe win a national title.
And by the way, when teams, quote unquote, vacate championships.
Never happened. Yep. It's vacated. UMass vacated the Final Four, right?
Yet the banner's
they
still
weren't
out
there.
Nope. You go to.
Never happened.
It's still there. It's still. Wasn't the Q's in that Final Four?
Yeah.
They lost to
Kentucky.
Mississippi? No,
yeah,
Kentucky beat UMass.
No, I'm just naming the other teams. They lost to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
It was Mississippi State, I thought.
Yeah, and then it was Syracuse, Kentucky, right?
Yeah, final? And Kentucky won the national title.
UMass was there. I was there. It was at the Meadowlands. I can assure you. I can tell you. I can prove for you that UMass was there. NCAA may try to tell you otherwise,
sure
Chris
Filani,
but UMass was there.
Vacated.
And I've often said if they had given Goodell Padilla more minutes during the regular season, he'd have been better prepared because all the guards were hurt. They could have put him in the second half. They would have made a big comeback, and they would have won a national championship.
That then would have been vacated. I mean, it doesn't make you feel a little bit better. At least you didn't vacate the national title. Although, if you win it, you win it. I always thought the whole idea of vacating championships was kind of silly. But that's something, though.
I think the banner... UMass
is it still there? Do they have to take it down?
You can't order a school to take a piece
of cloth
down.
You did not win that. Take that piece of cloth down. That is an...
You cannot
that
order
is ill-gotten,
a school...
That is ill-gotten cloth that is up on that wall.
I am here to tell you, sir...
At the Mullen Center.
That banner is still hanging out there at UMass.
Absolutely disgraceful. And again, I stress, if you're the FBI, you didn't find anything on Syracuse, you're done. Just pack it up. You're done. No need to look any further. You know, kidding aside, though, with the what's happening now, and this idea has been floated out there over the past day, teams have got to start thinking if they're... closet isn't exactly clean. Do I sit guys that I know are attached to this, or I just try to win a national title anyway and then worry about getting it vacated down the line? I think they'll probably go the latter route, but there are so many big stars and big coaches that are implicated that are coaching and playing right now today as this is happening. Duke's tied up in this, which is why they're leading Syracuse at halftime. They're cheating. Obviously, they're winning.
Clean
like program
that like
the
Duke,
orange
right?
I don't like Duke. I've never liked Duke.
Are you a Krzyzewski fan?
I got to respect the guy, although he's cheating, clearly.
Have you ever seen the Duke basketball building? On
Cameron
campus?
Indoor?
Not the facility, but they have like a building. I don't know if it's the athletic. It's a very, very big, impressive-looking
like
building.
I've seen shots on, College Game Day or something. I've never been down there. I'd love to see
I've been
campus.
To Cameron
there,
once.
It's beautiful.
Preseason NIT, Boston College versus Duke. I was a columnist with the National... Mm-hmm. And I went down, I want to say it was 1990. I'd have to look it up, but okay. I guarantee you, BC. Yeah, it was definitely 1990, and I can tell you that the day after that game, I flew from Durham to Buffalo. I want to say it was Buffalo. It was either Buffalo or Philly.
That is a dramatic change.
But I did a BC Duke preseason NIT game at Cameron, and then on Sunday, I believe I was in Buffalo for a Pats game.
Nice.
1990. I'm going to look that up, see if I know what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, you're doing that. We'll get back to the phone. 617-779-7937. Get back to the baseball. Ron in Cranston. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Ron.
Before I talk about the pace of play, I think as I was listening while I was on hold, the Syracuse thing you were talking about, you're right about the Mississippi State. That was 1996. Syracuse didn't win it, though. That was the John Wallace losing to Kentucky.
No, I know they didn't win it. Syracuse only won it once. That was 03.
Right, with Carmelo. Yeah, yeah. But
that one I remember.
The funny thing about that year was UMass, they went to the Final Four with Marcus Camby, but if you recall, they actually almost lost in the first round to number 15, St. Peter's. I remember I picked St. Peter's that year to beat UMass in the first round, and they almost pulled it off, but that's neither here nor there.
That would have been a coup for you in the 15-2.
Yeah, I remember it was my senior year, and I picked St. Peter's because I didn't believe in UMass as far as an Atlantic 10 team being like a number 2 seed. And I remember coming home, that was like a 2 o'clock game. I remember coming home and St. Peter's was like up late in that second half, and it almost happened. But UMass pulled it off and then went to the Final Four. But the pace of play, you know, it's interesting because I know baseball's trying to make all these moves, and I don't really think it's going to matter too much. The only thing that would ever change the pace of play, and they're not going to do this, would be if they went to 3 balls, 2 strikes, or 7 innings, and that's not going to happen. You know, it's
what do you mean
like
three balls? What do you mean going to 3 balls, 2 strikes?
Oh, like a walk.
Two strikes and you're out?
A walk, two strikes, you're out. Or you go to 7 innings. But, I mean, that's not going to happen. But I think that's the only true way you're ever going to shorten this. But, you know, sometimes I think that the pace of play, it's really not the actual game. Like, over a 162-game season or an 82-game season in the NBA, I don't really think on a nightly basis it's about the pace of game issue because, for example, I don't think anyone in Minnesota is complaining about this past baseball season's pace of play. I think they had a very fun 162 games.
That's because they're a mid-market team that had taken a big dip, and all of a sudden they turn it around. Malta has a very exciting team.
Right,
and everybody
right.
in the Twin Cities was yay team. They're excited because there is no annual expectation the team's going to win the World Series. That's different in Boston.
But the thing is, I feel like I think it's more about the process. Like the 08 Rays or the 04 Red Sox or the 91 Braves or even in the NBA, I enjoyed the 02 Celtics more than the 08 championship because of the expectations, I guess you are getting back.
Was that when they got broomed by the Nets in the Eastern Conference
Finals?
Yeah,
that makes one of us.
Not broomed. That's when they came back and took the 2-1 lead when we were down by like 26. And we ended up when we had Kenny Anderson, Pearson.
Yeah, I remember. I was at that game, but didn't they lose the series in 5?
Yeah, they lost the series in 6, actually. And then the Nets got swept by the Rangers.
They lost,
Richard Jefferson was on that team, a much younger Richard Jefferson.
Yes, yes.
An in-shape Walker.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess my point is sometimes it's more about the makeup of the team than the actual pace of the games.
Yeah, I hear you, but I got to say, I was a bit more excited about the 07-08 Celtics than I was the 01-02 Celtics.
Yeah.
Yeah, way more excited.
But they were expected to go deep in that 07-08.
Oh, no,
they weren't expected to win at all.
No, I wrote a whole book on this. There was a lot of talk. I had a whole chapter on that called Chemistry Class. There were a lot of people, and I do a lot of lift-outs in that chapter from national media types, that said, just because you go out and get these new guys, that you can't assume the chemistry and they don't have depth. And Bob Ryan, who knows more about basketball than I'll ever know,
right? Yeah,
said that, well, what about after these big three? What, you know, and well, he didn't take into account that P.J. Brown, they would later get Sam Cassell, and they
Eddie House. James Posey was huge.
James Posey, and that team was a lot more than the rebuilt big three.
And even in the playoffs, remember they had 2 7-game series.
I mean, they opened up a 7-game series against Atlanta. And they,
Detroit, too.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is going into that season, now did a lot of people think that they had put together a team that was going to win? Yes, a lot of people felt that way. And even though Danny Ainge put his hands up and said, hey, whoa, let's not just go call him the big three just yet. Yet the Celtics media guy yearbook for that season, who did they have on the cover?
The big
Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce. So marketing didn't listen to Danny on that one.
Well, do you think last year's Celtics team, I think last year's team was way more exciting on a nightly basis than this year's because of the makeup of the team, the kind of little engine that could.
No, I see, and Ron, I see where you're going with that. I completely disagree.
Isaiah was exciting last year.
Isaiah was exciting, but last year's team, you got the sense, because it's looking at, I guess, maybe in a macro and micro view. You got the sense that last year's team got the most that it possibly could out of what it had. And I know Isaiah got hurt in the playoffs, got hurt in that series against Cleveland, but they were also maybe a Rajon Rondo injury away from not even getting past Chicago. I think you got the most you could possibly get. With this year's team, you not only have the excitement of the way the team plays on a nightly basis and the fact that they're 41-19, but also the fact that you feel like they're building towards something and that there may be one big piece. Maybe it's just getting Gordon Hayward back or Hayward plus something else to actually winning a championship. I didn't have that feeling
surprised.
Of last year's team.
I thought that when Gordon Hayward went down and then the next two nights later they have the home opener and Gordon's in the hospital bed waving hi. I just kind of thought the Celtics fans were resigned to the fact they lost a key player, that this would be a decent season, that there's no chance they're going to compete. And yet, they bought in all the way along.
Well, they won 18 in a row after that 0-2 start, so that helped.
But I was amazed right off the bat going to Celtics games how loud and cheerful it was. And it is. I haven't been there lately because of the Super Bowl and the spring training trip. Yeah. But watching games on TV, it sounds like people are pretty invested. The Bruins.
And I think part of that is the fact that, again, you're looking at this group and saying, okay, this is good, this is fun, this is exciting, and they're building to something. And
I just want to tell you,
that's what they're bringing every night.
Chris Filani, that on Friday, November 16th, 1990, I was in attendance at Cameron Indoor Stadium to see the Duke beat Boston College 100-76.
Rough one for the Eagles.
And the preseason NIT, and that just 2 days later, on Sunday, November 18th, I was in Buffalo to see the Patriots lose to the Buffalo Bills by the horrible score of 14-0. Must have been a very boring game.
What the hell did you write about either one of those games?
I don't know, but it probably was as good as these games indicate.
All right. 617-779-7937. We got a half hour to go, taking you up till 8 o'clock. Steve Buckley, Chris Vellante, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Kirk and Callahan.
None of those
you don't
things
think
mean
you and
anything.
I are friends? Should we be friends?
No, I don't
want to. Do you
want to
be friends?
No.
Well, you're good friends with Bradford.
Yes, but we go way. I'm at the point in my life where I don't want to make any more friends.
I'm worried.
I wouldn't worry about a Kirky.
Yeah, you think I'm safe?
Kirk Minahan, Jerry Callahan. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com. Boston. This is Chris Vellante and Steve Buckley on WEEI.
To go. Vellante and Buck, we've been talking baseball for the past 2.5 hours with you guys in our shotgun 5-8 show here that we just kind of slapped together. Nobody knew we'd be here. But here we are.
And no one gave us a chance. And yet, full bank of calls from us the entire show.
We're kind of like the Red Sox.
We're going to try and get some more calls in.
the Yankees.
We actually have phone lines open right now. So
617-779-7937 if you want to jump on board. Let's assume for the sake of argument, JD Martinez does sign this medical issue, whatever, it goes by the wayside, he can stay healthy and productive. Do you put the Red Sox in the same category neck and neck with the Yankees?
Yes.
I do too.
Yes.
But I feel like there's a hesitation, there's a pushback on that. And I don't want to sound like I'm playing the homer side of the street here, but this is still a team that did win. I know with all the other issues they had in the playoffs, that still won 93 games, and at least on paper, getting a healthy price, the young guy's a year older, a year more experienced, and adding JD Martinez into this hypothetical mix got a heck of a lot better over the course of the offseason. I'm not going to say they're going to win 10 more games and be a 100-win team or anything like that, but to say in the mid-90s and challenging the Yankees is very realistic, in my opinion.
I covered the World Series, and it was in Houston with Jason Mastrodonato from the Herald. And we're watching this burgeoning powerhouse do something historic. The, you know, you go all the way back to the Colt 45s, and
yep,
they're finally going to win a World Series. What a great team. And then I'm sitting there saying, for the brief time that he was on the mound, David Price owned the Houston Astros.
Yep.
He was throwing pitches in the two relief appearances, I believe, in the division series.
Yeah, one shorter one and one was like 70 pitches.
That were, and I know there was a like a line drive or something, but if you go back, I don't know if it's on YouTube or not, but if you can find David Price pitching in the division series against the Houston Astros, his placement was, it seemed like every pitch was like 1/16th of an inch touching the strike zone. Boom, boom, boom. And it got me to thinking, if the Sox get that guy on the mound for 32 starts in 2018, that changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
He got a lot of grief, 17 wins, but he started slow and he was kind of methodical. But that if you've seen David Price get an inning punch out, called third strike on a boom fastball on the corner, and he walks off the mound, he's got a look on his face like he's pissed. That's exciting.
Yeah.
There's something about that that's you know, dare I say, Pedro, because you almost can't do that. But there are certain guys over the years that have had great seasons but didn't, like, have you rolling on the floor with seizures. But then there are certain guys that do that. Clemens, obviously. Pedro, obviously. Schilling in 07, and, you know, he had his moments. But I would put Price in that group if he can pitch for a full season the way he did in that little Whitman sampler we saw in the playoffs last year.
Well, and even building upon that, one thing that we have seen from Price over the course of his career is he has the potential to be a horse when it comes to innings. He's led the league in innings a couple of times, including 2 years ago. He led the league in innings in a Red Sox uniform. So he's done this recently. And the other guy that sometimes gets the Pedro comparisons is Chris Sale. But what we saw from Chris Sale over the last 10 starts last year is unfortunately indicative of what he's done in the second half in Chicago as well. Having Price be that innings-eating kind of guy that can help them, you know, stay consistent in terms of their rotation, win games, et cetera, the first half of the year, does that allow them to skip a Sale start in June, maybe around the All-Star break, give him some extended time off? Because you need Sale fresher. I don't worry about it as much with Price as long as he's healthy. He can throw 230 innings and be fine and still be strong in the postseason. With Sale, I worry about it because some of the games that I was doing for on the network, that Toronto game, for example, Josh Donaldson, it's two home runs. I mean, he was serving up gopher balls like crazy that last stretch.
This?
Chris Sale.
Yeah.
And that's what he was the second half in Chicago. Just look at the splits. That's consistent for him. You need to get him. You need to manage his innings more so. David Price can help that.
You know, the Red Sox, and stay with me on this, Red Sox remind me of the Mets in that the Mets could win 100 games, and they could win 78 games. In that, what kind of Matt Harvey are you going to get? What kind of Noah Syndergaard are you going to get? What kind of Jacob DeGrom are you going to give? DeGrom, I think, is probably the given.
He's the surest bet out of those. Harvey's probably the biggest
wild card.
And
who am I missing? Steven Matz. And then they got Gesellman and Lugo. And who's the guy? Jason Vargas. So, is Harvey going to bounce back? Is Matz going to be healthy? Is Syndergaard going to, you know, because he's all big and strong, and is he going to pull something? All of those guys, if they pitch up to their potential and pitch to the degree that they pitched in the recent past, the Mets become a formidable team in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you look at the Red Sox, and I would say Chris Sale is their Jake DeGrom, or Jake DeGrom is Boston's Chris Sale. Sale had a better season. But I would say Chris Sale is, wouldn't you say he's the given?
Yeah, he's the guy you feel the best about.
So
Price is still kind of got something
Price
to prove.
Becomes the Matt Harvey, who was hurt for a lot of last year. So, and we've seen Harvey, you know, the Dark Knight. We've seen him, like, maul people in the National League. So David Price is the Matt Harvey in the mix. And then you got Rick Porcello. You know, the Matz comparison doesn't really work because Matz was hurt. Porcello just was, you know, having trouble with his sinker.
Gave up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, I got to tell you. as someone who watched the Sox a lot last year, when he gives up home runs, they stay hit.
Yep.
I mean,
not a lot of cheap ones.
You know, it's like, no. You know, that should have a Sturtis on it, you know, that whole thing. And so, you know, Porcello could be 2 years ago, he wins the Cy Young, or it could be last year and gets up 38 home runs, I think. And Matz, remember he made his major league debut and like mowed him down and had a double and three hits and had this phenomenal game in his major league debut. So the Mets to me are like the Red Sox, that you can look at their starting rotation and project them winning all these games. Like, this could be the best rotation we've ever seen. And you can do the same thing with the Red Sox. Now, on the same token, we could get 10-14 out of Rick Porcello, and David Price gets hurt again, and he's gone for 6 weeks.
Sale falls apart again the second half of the season.
Sale gets tired and is a five-inning starter in the postseason. I haven't even mentioned Eduardo Rodriguez, who could win 15 games, except that he hasn't yet. So, I mean, and Stephen Wright, you know, he's got the domestic violence thing that's being investigated by Major League Baseball. They could lose him for a while. He's also coming back after missing practically the entire season. You got to put a big question mark by him.
Yeah.
But he had that great run 2 years ago until he hurt himself sliding in a second base at Dodger Stadium. So it's like you can drive yourself crazy looking at this. Like, this team could do all this. Oh, they could do that.
And that's before even getting to the other side of the coin where you think you're adding a guy that hit 45 home runs in 120 games last year, assuming they actually add him. Just look at his OPS and his other numbers up there in the top 5 or 10 power hitters in the league over the course of the last 4 or 5 seasons. So you're adding that into a mix with a guy, Mookie Betts, that almost won an MVP a couple of years ago, these young guys that are getting better, the depth that you have with Hanley Ramirez. Now you don't need – there were way too many times last season where they were counting on Hanley Ramirez to drive in a run for him. And that's a bad spot to be.
That's a bad spot to be in, yes.
That's a really bad spot to be. I remember being a game in Kansas City as just one example where they're down by a run late and it's the 9th inning. They need Hanley Ramirez. That was one of those spots where I really wanted the Rich Eisen rule. I wanted somebody else to hit in that, but I don't know who else they would have had. They didn't really have that guy to drive in a run for him. It had to be Hanley, and I think he struck out or he popped out. He didn't drive in the run, put it that way. They lost the game. Not putting him in that position, it makes this team potentially a lot better. So that's why, I mean, people look at the addition of Stanton, and I feel like they kind of wrote off the division and said it's the Yankees. And yeah, maybe I'd give the Yankees a slight edge right now because there are a bunch of unknowns with this Red Sox team, and you feel pretty confident what you're going to get out of Judge and Stanton, Sanchez, and some of the other guys they've got. But there is, and it's not that crazy of a scenario, a real scenario here where the Red Sox and Yankees are neck and neck, and we're throwing back the clock to 2004. Won't be quite that intense, obviously, but just in terms of where they are in the standings, leaving everybody else in the dust, and kind of a good old-fashioned fight it out with the two big payroll power-hitting little engines that could.
I hate that little engine that could thing. It drives me crazy. And by the way,
Cashman said that. You said that. Cashman. It was Cashman.
Brian Cashman. Drives
ridiculous.
Me crazy. And by the way, people keep saying that Martinez had one great season. Well, he did hit the magic 4-0 last year in the home run count, but I would have I would counsel Sox fans to look at last 4 seasons and look at the total numbers. That's a good 4-year run for him. If he would have come to Boston and have a similar 4-year run, you'd like to see him hit a bit more home runs, you know, than he did in the first 2 years of that run. But I think they got this guy right at the right time.
But how does he hit more? He's got to play. That's the only number that
that he plays, yes.
But that he plays more than 120 games.
It's built on the presumption he plays more than 120 games.
I mean, if this guy plays, let's say, 140 games.
It means Hanley, if he only plays 120 games, Hanley gets his contract vested for 19.
Oh, man. Can you imagine what a story that would be if it's the last week of the season and Hanley's at like 492 appearances or something like that, and the Red Sox are fighting for the division or fighting for a playoff spot? And, oh, man, I don't even want to imagine it. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll wrap things up on the other side. Buck and Villani with you, Sports Radio WEEI.
Boston Sports Station. WEEI.
WEEI.
WEEI
Radio.
WEEI.
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 The station Bostonians have turned to for over 25 years. And the number one sports station in New England. This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com. Boston.
Back to Villani and Buck on Sports Radio WEEI.
few minutes left here, Villani and Buck, till we hand things off to, I think, NBA. Let's say it's the Warriors and the Thunder. Yeah, how about that? ESPN radio broadcast. Maybe I'll go down and check it out, see how they're doing.
I'm waiting.
Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to come up with something to talk about, right, for these last few minutes. You know, we have been talking about a lot during the breaks, and not to necessarily bring it, but the Boston Herald.
Yes. Let's talk about the Boston Herald.
I know you're long time. How long have you been at the Herald? How many years?
23 years.
23 years.
Yes.
A long time Herald scribe.
Loved every minute of it. Wow, there was that trip to Kansas City back in 06, but.
Kansas City will get you.
Actually,
time.
Oh, my God, it was 06. No, there was a 3 or 4 game trip to Kansas City in like July or August that the Sox were just about falling out of it. They were fading. Everyone was hurt, and there was this and that. And I just recall that it was like 99 degrees and humid all 4 days. And if you've ever been to Kauffman Stadium,
I have.
It's out sort of like it's like in Foxborough. It's out in the suburbs and off the highway. And you drive, it's next to Arrowhead. It's all one big complex. Yep. And you park, and just in the like 6 minutes it took to get my car inside of the ballpark, it was like you just soaked. And it was like your head was pounding. So I have enjoyed thoroughly my 23 years at the Herald, except for those 4 days in Kansas City in 2006.
New era at the Herald about to start.
It is. And it's we don't know what the future is, and we don't know what changes they're going to make. I'm excited about it. I've written that I would love to see the city remain a two newspaper town. I'm not a Globe basher, other than to say the Globe instantly becomes a lesser newspaper the day the Herald's no longer around.
Think about it from the radio.
And you follow the logic behind that.
No,
right?
And here's the example I'll give you. You know, I grew up listening to The Big Show, and The Big Show was the only real, I mean, you know, 1510 was kind of doing its thing, and you know, 890, Felger actually did okay over there.
So you
given the,
listened to me when you were a kid?
Yes, I did. Absolutely did.
With your dad, who's younger than me?
Poster on the wall and everything.
Yeah.
So, but when the
Big
other...
Big Show trading cards.
the Maxwell one was the one that was the rare one, the tough
I'll,
one to
I'll
find.
I'll trade you 5 Maxes for $1.
That sounds about right. So when the Sports Hub came in, though, it made everybody over here. But all of a sudden, and I was starting to work for EI doing the Sports Flash at the time, all of a sudden there was no more, hey, the Big Show can come back at, you know, 4:15 or 15 minutes past the hour or something like that. There's no more 20-minute commercial breaks, guy. We need to try to tighten things up and try to make everybody better overnight because you couldn't kind of get fat and happy with
Woodway,
what was going on.
The worst clock management of anyone I have ever worked with.
I've tried to give him a run for his money tonight. The first hour we went over pretty heavily.
Horrible.
But,
horrible. I mean,
well, and this thing I'm pointing on the radio, which is always great.
They put that in for Woodway.
It's an Woodway. Yeah. It's a stoplight, basically, they put in here to flash when it's time to go to a break. Because
that's how
bad it was.
I hosted shows for years, and the light goes on. All right, be right back. Bye. It's not that hard.
Right. No, of all the things that are difficult in radio, going to a break is actually one of the easier ones.
God.
But you're right. Having that and I know there are people that hate the Herald. I know there are people that hate the Globe because of the editorial slant. But if you can get past that, which I know a lot of people can't, if you can get past that and look at the reporting that's done on both the news and sports side. And I worked 2.5 years at the Herald, not 23, but on the news side of things. And I can tell you that the Globe was always worried about what we were doing and vice versa. And that competition meant more people questioning politicians, more people trying to find out what happened if there's a shooting spree or a crime wave in the city, more people trying to find out what's happening with J.D. Martinez. And is he ever going to sign with the Red Sox? You know, the sports scoops as well and those types of stories. And that's why I left the Herald. There were a lot of reasons for that. The bankruptcy was not part of the equation for me, but the fact is, I want this paper to come out strong.
And
not
by the way,
I
lucked out because
the city's better for it.
I lucked out because I took the job in January of 95, I guess. And first couple of years, you know, it wasn't much going on. The Pats went to the Super Bowl in 96, 97. But then all of a sudden, that great run from 02 to right where we are now.
Yeah.
There's probably never in the history of Boston newspapers a better 20-year stretch to be a sports writer than the one that I'm on right now with all that's happened.
Not bad at all.
10 championships.
When David Price pitches game 7 this year, just add to that add to that list right there. Buck, always a pleasure, man.
See you, Chris. Have fun with Andy Hart tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
I will.
And he knows his baseball. So
I look forward to talking to baseball with Andy Hart. He's Steve Buckley on Twitter at Buck in Boston. You can find me at Chris Villani 44. Have a fantastic Saturday night, everybody. See you.
And Fourier.
If you're looking for a real hole in the Red Sox,
if they have an injury to somebody in this rotation, they got problems.
Right now, Hector Velasquez is our fifth. We don't know what's going on with Erod.
Rick Porcello needs to have a good season. If he doesn't, that will be a major problem.
Throw Price in there.
Oh, well, hold on. That goes without saying.
No. I think it goes without saying. If Price and Sale aren't your one and your 1A, they're screwed.
Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier. 10 to 2 middays on Sports Radio WEEI and WEEI.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.